And ladies and gentlemen, the call is now being recorded. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and welcome to everyone again. Pretty simple agenda. Any comments on the agenda? And I kind of, I think, addressed everybody that's on the call already, so I won't go through a roll call. all right. There's two things we want to cover today. The draft motion for the council that Liz sent to the council last week on Thursday, and then the definitions of key study terms. And those documents are pretty close to being finished, but there are just a few remaining issues. I copied on the agenda, at the bottom of the agenda, the motion as it stands now, mainly because it's fairly lengthy and I thought it'd be helpful to have it all in one place. It's also on the wiki. Thanks, Liz, for doing that. So the first issue we want to talk about there is the, you know, should we include GAC data set 1? Now, in our last meeting, for those that weren't on that call, and let me back up a little bit, especially for the sake of Carlos. GAC data set 1 was not in the motion previously for inclusion in any of the six categories of studies that we recommended for cost estimates and feasibility estimates. We decided in our last call that maybe we should include that just to have it done. Since then, Liz made some comments, and I'll let her talk about that. Tim has explained his concerns on the list, and I think that in that regard, I think that Bill Drake had kind of agreed with Tim. But let me let Liz talk about her concerns with regard to, or the issues that you communicated, Liz, with regard to data set 1.
Sure, Chuck. I actually think there's two issues with data set 1. I think the first is that, you know, we decided early on that we wanted to, and we spent months, weeks, defining testable hypotheses and operating under the assumption that all the studies that we would do would have testable hypotheses for actual studies. And I think data set 1, GAC data set 1, in a sense, violates that principle. But my greater concern is that I think actually doing a study along the lines of what GAC data set 1 is asking for is close to impossible. And if it isn't impossible, I'm not quite sure how. I mean, I think there's a major challenge to doing it. I think our reasoning when we focused on testable hypotheses and decided in the hypotheses working group not to delineate data set 1 separately was the assumption that for all testable hypotheses, there would need to be data gathered, and that it would be the responsibility of the staff and the actual performers of the studies and the feasibility assessments of the studies to determine how best to test those hypotheses, what data points would be needed, how to construct a study to do that. And so I think this is just an anomaly. It doesn't fit into that construct where there's a testable hypothesis, nor do I think it's particularly feasible to gather the specific data that they're asking for. It's enormous. I think it kind of swallows up a lot of other things.
Okay. Am I correct, Liz, that none of the studies that we have in our motion to go to the next step have required data set 1 in any way? Is that correct?
Well, I think they could. Like, when you look at misuse of who is data, and, for example, study...
Group A.
Group A, thanks. The kinds of things that Group A is focused on would be, if you look at data set 1 and it says the numbers of different groups of users and what those users are using who is data for, the implication there, I think, is that there are, you know, acceptable uses and unacceptable uses, and trying to get some quantitative data on all of the uses, both acceptable and unacceptable. So I think it is that Group A is a more narrowly tailored. It would require some of data set one to do, which isn't to say that's going to be particularly easy, and we still haven't tested the feasibility, so that's yet to be determined how best to do it. But I think it would incorporate some of what data set one.
Yeah, okay.
Can I get in the queue, Chuck? It's Steve.
Sure, Steve, go ahead.
Following on what Liz said, if you read a little further down under the third group, the motion, second to the last item under the third group is GAC Study 1 hypothesis, and that, I know it's not GAC Data Set 1, but we have put as many places in here wherever the GAC could be inferred to have a hypothesis. We've written it in, and several of those hypotheses to be tested will require the kind of inquiry that Liz just described that's in Data Set 1. I echo Tim Ruiz's concern is that most of this is about making the GAC feel as if council has really listened to them. And there's got to be a way to convey that the data that's in data set one is going to be interrogated as a result of investigating hypothesis-driven study. I have to believe we can satisfy.
Okay. Just coming on that, Chuck, if I can, from your ISP, Steve articulated exactly the feelings we have as well. We have the same issue with that.
So am I hearing both of you suggesting then that you think we ought to leave data set one in there, even though it's kind of inconsistent with the whole approach?
I'm sorry, Chuck. I wasn't suggesting putting it in the motion, but rather when we convey this to the GAC, and that was something we decided we would do, we're going to convey it to the GAC with a letter that explains how we have mapped these studies, these hypothesis-driven studies, to the letter that Kirkland submitted.
Okay.
Right.
That was the interpretation I had of Tim's comments as well, that if we're going down that path, he would support that.
Yeah, Tim came back and said he was pretty flexible. It wasn't a big issue for him. He was, like both of you expressed, trying to do something that is satisfactory for the GAC's perception. But I think you're right that could be addressed in our correspondence to them once the motion passes the council, assuming it does.
Hey, Chuck, this is Carlos. Just to get it clear, one of the major concerns about not including GAC data set 1 in the motion, I quite get it that to report to GAC or to show GAC that some consideration or some reflection has been done on both data sets and all hypotheses suggested by GAC. This, of course, can be done not in the motion, but in some sort of a letter of explanation that we can send to the GAC. But my question is, Liz, we're talking about that there's no prerequisite, or it's not mandatory for us to have data set one, because, of course, we have lots of issues that are included in data set one spread from all over all the other hypotheses. And my question is, we could just send this kind of information in some form of communication or in a letter saying that this is the motion and data set one is not included, because we felt that those issues are better addressed or narrowly addressed in some those and name the hypotheses in which those things happen. But this study or this connection between which study hypothesis addresses one issue that is being contemplated by data set one, I believe this is something that could be sent to GAC.
Thank you. So it sounds, Carlos, if I'm interpreting that correctly, yeah, sure, just a second, Aubrey. If I'm interpreting that correct, you're pretty much in agreement then with what I heard Steve and Tony say.
Yeah, Chuck, my feeling is that to have the GAC data set one in the motion to be submitted to the evaluation of cost and feasibility would be the best scenario. But if we have a solution, or if we have some way to communicate that we have analyzed it, we have made some reflections on data set one, and we feel that the issues addressed in data set one are connected or are better explored in and name the hypotheses in which that happened. I think that's the it's not the best scenario, but I think we can be flexible on that.
Okay, thank you. Aubrey, welcome, and welcome to Terry, too.
Yeah, sorry, I got here a few minutes late. This is the very beginning of this. But I guess I'm looking at it slightly differently. One, this data set that we're having problems with was one of the ones that bubbled to the top of the pool. And one of the
top
things
of what pool,
of things that we were going to ask for estimates on, that we were going to basically have a professional look at and give us an evaluation and bids and et cetera, correct?
Not exactly. We prioritized all of the, as you know, and somebody correct me if I've got this wrong, but we prioritized all of the hypotheses. But we really didn't prioritize data sets.
Right, because we don't really know
what
data set is useful for what. I mean, we have our semi-professional, professional, sometimes naive, sometimes not, individual viewpoints on what's useful and what's not. But we don't actually know.
Yeah, right.
And so I guess I don't see a problem with leaving that, and maybe this is similar to what Tony and Steve were saying, I don't see a problem with just leaving that issue to those that have to make the judgment. Now, we have, you know, five hypotheses, or however many, six, whatever the number is, that rose to the surface. Those are the ones we're asking. There are several possible data sets that may or may not be applicable. You guys are the professionals. You know, tell us what is needed, what is useful, what is feasible, what is practical. I mean, we did put the general opinion of feasibility in, and, you know, that measure really didn't get used that much. Very few of us thought that anything was not feasible in terms of a hypothesis. And so I'm thinking that may be best left to the professionals we're going to.
So you prefaced your comments by saying that you were looking at it a little bit differently, but it sounds like you're coming to the same conclusion. Am I reading that right?
I think that I'm coming to a similar conclusion from a slightly different perspective.
Yeah.
I don't think the fact that it's the GACS or not the GACS is really pertinent.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's nice, and we should want to make sure we've listened to them, and we should be able to write letters saying we've listened to you. But I think what's most important is that it's up to the people we're going to for a bid to decide what's useful, what's not. We've collected hypotheses. We've postulated a couple data sets. Here, guys, tell us what's practical, what's not. You're the professional.
Yeah, good. Okay.
Can I seek some clarification there?
Sure.
Just so I've got it right, Chuck. Avery, what you're actually saying then is that we would include it, but the decision on it wouldn't actually be taken at this time. Is that correct?
Right. That basically the data set that's useful for the hypothesis is really something for the professional.
Okay. If we were to go down that path, Chuck, I still feel that we would ideally send a response to the GAC telling them exactly what we're doing in that case.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, I think that's a given. Let me, Terry, do you have anything you're one who hasn't commented on this. Do you have any thoughts on this?
Not right at the moment, Chuck.
Okay.
I'm still trying to understand exactly what parts of this who is would be valuable from the side I kind of look at it from.
Okay. All right, thanks. I just wanted to give you an opportunity. Anyone else have comments on this? Now, I think, and there's a couple places where it wasn't totally clear to me, but I think what I'm hearing is that the way the motion is drafted right now, and it doesn't refer to data set one, okay, is okay. Now, am I incorrect on that?
You're correct.
Okay. Anybody disagree with that? Okay, very good. So we're in agreement then that the way it's drafted right now, it doesn't refer to data set one. Excuse me?
I'm back. I'm so sorry, it's Liz.
Okay, thanks, Liz. I saw that you had dropped off, so Les, basically, while you dropped off there, have come to the conclusion that, that the way the motion is drafted now, not referencing data set one, is fine to send to the council, but that in our communication with the GAC after council action on this motion, that we carefully explain that that data set could, or some subset of it, could be applicable to other hypotheses that are involved in the recommendations.
Okay. That sounds great, and I can even draft that note for the group's review.
Yeah, that would be great. Okay.
At the appropriate time.
Okay. In any case, we have this council further request, the staff communicates, we have this wording by the end of the motion that says that further studies or further cost estimates can be requested. So
that's right.
So if we got to a conclusion in the in council discussions that we need to make cost estimates for data set one, or that's possible through this kind of wording.
That's right. Because we do have that flexibility. Very
okay.
Good. Okay, let's move on then to...
Chuck, just one addition, if I
sure,
can,
Tony.
To that. I would suggest when the letter is drafted to the GAC, we should make the point that we will endeavor to keep them up to date with the outcome of that discussion as well. I don't think we should just treat it as though it's now dismissed.
Right. That's a good suggestion.
Great.
Okay. Going on to the second issue then in the motion... and that was Liz's communication concern that studies 3 and 20 that relate to the RAA provision, it's still their opinion that it's not feasible. And I think from discussion on the list that the people that did respond to that weren't inclined to remove that from the list, possibly in, at least in part, because that's part of the task, and maybe the first task that has to happen is determine feasibility before you determine cost. So did I capture that right? Who would like to comment on that? Liz, maybe I'll give you first shot, and then I'll let others jump in.
Yeah, I don't think it's a feasibility issue in the sense that the others are, you know, whether you could actually conduct it with the right inputs or not. I think the way it is articulated now is just basically inaccurate because... the hypothesis, that is, because it says as required under RAA 3773, and it's staff's understanding that what's being asked here, that revealing registrant data when presented with requests that provide reasonable evidence of actionable harm is not required under RAA 3773.
And do you agree that the motion gives enough flexibility for staff to deal with that when they're working this issue if the motion is passed?
I mean, I think not. I mean, I guess how I would respond if the motion was passed is to come back to the council with a statement that says something like staff does not believe this study can be conducted as... I would say basically what I'm saying now, which is we can't conduct the study as described. What we could do is... construct a study that determines whether RAA Section 3773 meets the needs of law enforcement and dispute resolution processes, assuming that that is what the council would like us to study, but that the study as written cannot be conducted, period.
Well, look at the second to last paragraph of the motion. That's what I was referring to.
Oh, okay.
That's what I thought. You know, staff is invited to pursue creative ways to develop cost estimates for these studies, including reformulations of the suggested
okay.
hypothesis.
I mean, sure, I can respond that way, and I can just reformulate the hypothesis
yeah.
then. So, sure, it seems somehow preferable to reach an understanding in advance so that we could make it more, so that we could focus our attention then on how we would actually construct the study to do what I'm suggesting, but it's just a suggestion. If the
now, okay, now just before I open it up to everyone else, so the change that would be needed then would be to, is it a, what was the change again? Could you go over that? If we were to change the actual hypotheses in both of those, I presume,
Well, the wording, I don't have exact wording, but the rough wording would be, does RAA Section 3773 meet effectively the needs of law enforcement and dispute resolution processes.
And would you delete the reference to 3773?
I started with the reference. Does REA Section 3773 meet effectively the needs of law enforcement and dispute resolution processes?
Okay, now let me open it up to everyone else, and I'll take a cue on that.
Joe Bianco.
Okay, Steve? Well? Go ahead, Steve.
Liz, as the author of Study 3, I don't welcome the reformulation because it sort of assumes that proxy operators are not obligated under 3773 to reveal upon evidence of actionable harm. And if that is in question, and I appreciate that that's a question you've raised, if that's in question, that ought to be resolved. And if it's determined that they're not obligated to reveal, then you ask your question, which is, does it serve the needs of law enforcement and dispute resolution? I think you jumped the gun by replacing my number three with yours, because then you don't even get to the question of does 3773 require reveal when I show evidence of actionable harm. Because you know where I got all that was in the very first Who Is Working Group, which feels like, 2 years ago. Now, I believe it was Paul Stahura who had told us all on that first working group call that, look, you guys are all freaking out over proxies, but proxies have to reveal. The registrars have to reveal under 3773. That's where I got that. So I've always understood that that was the practice today, and if it's not the practice, we would discover that by virtue of the test that I proposed under study number three, and that is to say we were going to fashion evidence of actionable harm tests and fire them at proxy operators and see whether and how quickly they respond. You brought up a great question. They may not actually be obligated to respond under the RAA. Let's discover that, and if they're not obligated, ask the question that you'd like to ask, which is, does it meet the needs of law enforcement and dispute resolution?
And that discovery could happen before you ever do any feasibility studies or cost estimates.
Yes, and I actually thought on one of our earlier calls, maybe I didn't lock it down, but I actually thought that we were going to ask staff at ICANN to go figure that out. Does 3773 bind proxy operators to reveal when shown evidence of actionable harm?
Yeah.
But that's still an open question. Gosh, don't wait for counsel to approve the resolution. Let's fire that into the queue so we can get an answer. Because if the answer comes back no, well, then Liz's reformulation will be welcome. I just don't want to jump to the reformulation before we know the answer to the legal question.
So we have the, not to jump in, but I think we have the answer from staff, so it's the question about how to resolve it that is in my mind. So, like, if you were asking me what is staff's position, I could fire off a note right now that just basically says what I said on the phone and what I've said before and what Stacy and David have said on previous calls.
Would you, in one sentence, state what that position is, please?
3773 does not require registrars to reveal registrant data that is shielded by proxy services when they are presented with requests that provide reasonable evidence of actionable harm. RAA 7 provision 3773 does not require that information to be revealed.
Okay.
What it does do is it would subject the registrar who fails to respond to action for harm that was caused by their failure to respond, but that harm would have to be proven, and so it isn't a violation of 3773.
And how does this relate to Study 20?
They're pretty much the same.
Yeah, one could argue that while it doesn't specifically require it, there is a acceptance of liability for not doing it, and that could be seen. So one could, on a very vernacular, say, yeah, it requires it. So I understand what's being said. Strictly, legally defined, it doesn't require it. But anything that puts liability on you when you don't do something is, in a sense, requiring something.
Anybody else want to comment before we try and wrap this one up?
feedback.
But I think it's Liz. I think the key there would be that it would not be ICANN. It wouldn't be an ICANN compliance matter. It would be a cause of action against either the registrar or the registrant.
Yeah.
And I said something slightly incorrect before, which is to say the registrar would be liable. And it would be depending on who the. It's really the registrant. If the registrar is acting as the registrant as a proxy service, it would be the registrar. It could be the registrant. But they would be subject to liability, but not by ICANN, by the complainant.
Steve?
Is it possible to just add at the end of the way Study 3 is phrased, to say, instead of just as required under RAA 3773, you could say, as required under RAA 3773, to avoid intermediary liability. So it's as required to avoid intermediary liability. I think technically that it gets to what Liz was saying, but still allows us to really interrogate the question.
Thoughts on that? Nobody jumping at that one, I take it?
Really wish Vitalis were on the call. He wrote 20, and he's really more the expert on this topic.
Yeah, he had told us, I think, that it was going to be hard for him. He didn't specifically respond to the meeting request, but he had told us that the state was bad for him earlier. So what we need to decide is do we make any change to the hypotheses as they're stated as far as this motion is concerned, or let that be handled in the staff process and responding to the motion? My inclination, not to unfairly influence this, but my inclination is to just leave it alone and let, I think there's enough flexibility in the motion that it can be handled going forward, and I think that's less confusing to people that haven't been working as closely to this as we have. But I'm perfectly open to making some changes, too. So what is the sense of the group?
This is Aubrey.
Go ahead, Aubrey.
I actually think that Steve's recommended small change might be useful.
Okay. Other thoughts?
Who recommended it? No.
Did somebody say something? No. Okay. All right. Other thoughts? Is anybody opposed to Steve's suggested change? And maybe, Liz, you can respond whether you think that helps.
Hi, Jeff. This is Carlos.
Just
mentioned that for me, I don't oppose to having this small change. I think it could be useful.
Okay. Anyone else? Anybody opposed to that change? And Liz, what do you think? I mean, does that help from your point of view?
Yeah, I think it helps, and I think that coupled with the latitude that we have in responding is fine.
So the wording, Steve, would you, I'm going to write it in this time so that I properly capture it in our meeting minutes. And then, Liz, if you can capture it, too, so that we resend, assuming that we all approve this, that we resend the motion, probably with that particular change highlighted, so that people can see very quickly that the only thing that changed. So, Steve, could you run that by me again, please?
Chuck, I'll read two formulations. I'm not a lawyer. I'll let you guys figure out what's better. But, Liz, one formulation is to say, as required under RAA, to avoid intermediary liability, but that intermediary could be a troubling phrase. So I'll give you a second formulation. You could say, as required to avoid liability under RAA 3773. That was as required to avoid liability under RAA 3773.
The latter one sounds like it might be a little safer to me. What do others think?
Sorry, could you repeat that?
So those very, as required, and insert the words, to avoid liability, and then the rest is the same, under RAA 3773. So they have to reveal, if you read the beginning of the sentence of the hypothesis, it's about registrars are not revealing, as required to avoid liability, under RAA 3773. So we're not saying they're required to reveal, we're saying that if they reveal, that would be the requirement to reveal to avoid liability.
And how would you do on study 20? Should we make a similar change?
Is the requirement, or what was perceived as a requirement, actually to avoid liability, though?
I believe that's what Liz's staff explanation was.
Yeah, I don't have the RAA right in front of me, but I believe that...
So you think that wording's okay, Liz?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. Thank you.
It's certainly improved.
Aubrey, now that that was reread, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm pretty much fine with it. I think the only thing that remains a slight catch, and it's probably not a big deal because of the flexibility, is that liability, as Liz said after we had spoken, is that liability is transferred on to the registrar only if the registrar is the registrant of record. And if they're using one of those schemes where it isn't, then it isn't. But I think that's probably fine. So that's why I thought the transfer of liability was perhaps less specific and therefore covered both cases, but I can live with it either way. I think I'm nitpicking in an area I'm not qualified to pick nits in. That's legal terminology. So.
At another time, we'll talk about what areas you're qualified to nitpick in, but we won't go there now.
Epistemology, but thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Aubrey. So, is anybody opposed to that edit to the Study 3 hypothesis? No? Okay. My next question, then, is are we leaving Study 20 hypothesis? It should be hypothesis, I guess, instead of hypotheses. Oh, there's two. I'm sorry. Ignore that. Okay, A and B. Any changes to that, or are we going to leave that alone?
This is Liz. I'm inclined to think that both Study 3 and Study 20, that where it says registrar in Study 3 and where it says proxy and privacy services in Study 20, if you actually look at the RAA, it refers to the registered name holder, which could be the proxy service, or it could be the registrar, or it could be a third party, you know, the actual registrant or a licensee on behalf of the registrant. So there just isn't quite symmetry here in either hypothesis with 377, with the actual language of 3773.
And this is Steve. They're not entirely redundant either, 3 and 20, because 3 was about reveal and 20 is about relay, which are different forms of response when an inquiry comes in.
Yeah. Any suggested changes to 20?
I think in both cases I would substitute registrars in the first one and proxy and privacy services in the second one to registered name holder.
Boy, I'm a little concerned there because that may kind of hide the intent of number 20.
With respect to number 3, Chuck, the author of 3.
You can talk to number 3. What would that work for you?
Yes, because proxy and privacy services would include the cases where the registrar actually is that entity. But it would more broadly encompass situations where the proxy or privacy service isn't actually the registrar. So, Liz, I would welcome that substitution on Study 3.
Well, let me hear the substitution again, because I don't think I got it right in my head.
Instead of saying some registrars are not revealing, I believe that Liz was suggesting some proxy and privacy services are not revealing.
Yeah, that works better because they're more likely to be the registered name holder. I'm just trying to track the actual language of 3773.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so it would say some proxy and privacy services are not revealing registrant data that is shielded. We wouldn't need the by proxy services again, would we? Would I delete that?
Probably.
Okay.
What you could probably do is even delete that. and still retain the same meaning, but that's
delete what?
Delete that is shielded.
And then say, and then make it actual registrant data.
Yeah,
represented by.
Oh, okay.
So I can read that back to
you. You were saying the word that. Okay.
Yeah. So some proxy and privacy services are not revealing actual registrant data when presented with requests, etc.
The term actual is probably a little bit loaded.
Underlying? True?
Yeah, I know. Is it okay to just leave it as or not revealing registrant data? Or do people think we should put in true or underlying or what's the feeling or actual, like Steve said it the first time?
If we put in a word, then I would probably argue more for words like suspected, alleged, whatever, words that meant maybe but not definite. But I'm willing to put in another word.
You might just say fully.
You know, you could say, to be more precise, you could say licensee registrant data.
And that applies in cases where there's a licensee, and there are other cases where there's not, if I understand it correctly. So that wouldn't cover all cases, would it? We could say registrant or licensee data as applicable.
It's just picking up that's the term that's referred to in 3773 as licensee.
So does that work, Steve, to say licensee?
Probably.
I think you're right that not all, there's not always a licensee contract. But that is just tracking the exact RAA language.
What's the preference here? Steve, it's your motion. Why don't you pick what you like there, and then we'll see if everybody else agrees.
The word actual registrant / licensee data. Because actual registrant is used in the very next study hypothesis for number 20. And so it's not meant to be a legalistic term. It's meant to be a term regular people understand. The actual registrant, unless the person is really controlling the domain. So actual registrant / licensee. What about that?
Any objection to that?
Sounds good to me.
Okay, so here's what we have for 3. Some proxy and privacy services are not revealing registrant / licensee data when presented with requests that provide reasonable evidence of actionable harm as required to avoid liability under RAA 3773.
Yeah, you just dropped the word actual, though. I would have had actual registrant.
Oh, okay. Okay, so actual.
I don't know what it means. You say it's there for regular people to understand. I don't know what actual registrant necessarily is. Is it the lawyer that registered for me? Is it the corporation? Is it me?
That's similar to the concern I had.
I just don't know who actual is. And I don't know that it matters that who the actual is. It's in some sense,
you have a problem, Steve, if it doesn't say actual. I don't think you really lose anything.
It would just be consistent, though. The very next hypothesis says actual registrant.
Yeah, well, then maybe it should drop them both.
Well, I don't know. I don't want to create more work, but maybe use it as a definition term in the sheet of the and get all the terms. I don't think it's a good idea for us to create another issue to get another definition in the term that the staff has provided.
So you'd rather not have the word actual there?
I don't feel comfortable for us to have some issues with some expression that could be misleading or generating lots of interpretations, so that will lead us to create another issue for the definition sheet.
Anybody else? Anybody opposed? Steve, I know you prefer actual there. It sounds like at least 3 of us think it's better to leave it out. Is that a big issue for you if we leave it out?
Not a big issue.
Okay. So, can we move on to study 20 then? Okay. All right, and I'll send this around when I do the meeting notes. In fact, I'll just attach the motion with the red line. So, what changes in Study 20 to be consistent with what we just did? Now, one of them we might jump to right now, we would delete actual there, right, at the end of A?
And put a slash licensee.
Yeah, right.
Then we have the question of whether B needs to be amended.
I mean,
is it the
for some proxy and privacy services, they're really not required to follow RIA unless the registrar requires them to, assuming they're not one and the same, right? If they're a third,
well, they're represented, Chuck, as the registered name holder.
Oh, okay.
They're referred to in the RIA in this context. They would be the registered name holder, and they would be subject to liability for harm resulting from failure to relay, but not subject to, they're not required again under the RIA, same issue, but they would be the registered name holder.
So you're saying B might be okay the way it is. Is that right?
No, I think B would have to get changed to something more like Study 3, like, I'm trying to think of how to phrase it because it's to avoid liability. It's that same concept.
Well, what about just adding to avoid liability at the end of RAA 3773? So it reads, some proxy and privacy services are failing to adhere to RAA 3773 to avoid liability.
Well, that one could be parsed wrong.
How would you parse it?
Right, basically, if we're not careful, basically one could parse it to say that doing this allows them to avoid liability. I know some.
No, but they don't urge, for favor,
proxy. Somebody needs to mute. Some proxy, and so I would actually word it differently because one could parse it to sort of say that the failure to adhere helps them avoid liability. If we're not careful in our phrasing.
Currently, it's just the same exact language as we used in Study 3, only replace the reveal with the relay. So it would be some proxy and privacy services do not promptly and reliably relay information when presented with requests that provide reasonable evidence of actionable harm as required to avoid liability under RAA 3773.
Except this one doesn't seem to have the actionable harm provision in it, does it?
Right.
This is asking for a relay without the necessity of actionable harm.
Correct?
See, I don't think 3773 requires relay at all. Just reveal.
Mm-hmm.
And if you fail to relay, do you incur the liability? You didn't tell the actual licensee that they've been...
There's no requirement for relay. It's only disclosure.
So basically, it's kind of like we're saying this, that they failed to relay, period. And of course, in best of all possible worlds, they would always relay. Even if they don't reveal.
So should we simply...
I have qualms about reveals, but I have no qualms about relays. One would think that in the best possible world, they would always relay. That would be part of the service.
But that would be fine if that's what was required under 3773.
Right,
but
right.
And so that's why I was encouraging us to look at, sort of, to put it bluntly, what's wrong with 3773 how could it be improved upon?
Right. So would it, for 20B there, would it be correct to just drop the reference to the RAA and say some proxy and privacy services are failing to relay whatever?
Then it's the same as A. Then B doesn't add anything.
That's true. Yeah. Well, does, I guess, if RAA 3773 is inapplicable there, then B probably doesn't add anything to A.
And I would have a suggestion is to drop little b from the end of study 20, and the hypothesis A is still testable without respect to whether there's an obligation under 3773.
Anybody opposed to that?
If I may add to that, Chuck, I mean, I appreciate that Liz is pushing back on what's really obliged or not, but the purpose of what we're trying to do is to gather information that will be useful for future policymaking in WHOIS. So there's questions sometimes, like, are people doing what they're currently obliged to do? Are people doing what they ought to do? And if they are, then we may need to say, are we really doing everything we need to do to help law enforcement and dispute resolution? I know Liz is eventually going to get around to posing that as the hypothesis, because that's really what we're trying to get at. But the intermediate question is so important to a number of us to know what exactly is required under 3773. So we really want to get to both levels of questions.
Robert, if I can add to that.
Go ahead.
Those questions, of course, are not the statistical study questions. Those are all the ones that we've been getting from the compliance and legal staff. And I think that it's good that that breaking down these statistical questions has actually really forced us to look at the specific what is required in this case, what is required in that case, since there have been lots of hand-waving about those things.
So, Steve, in your comment then, was that opposed to deleting B?
Oh, I proposed deleting B.
I understand that, but your next comment made me not so sure that you still wanted to do that.
Oh, I still do, and if it's as a result of formulating and studying this, I do hope that Liz will keep in mind that substitute question, that ultimate question that she wants to pose. Because if the discovery early on is, as a legal matter, they're not even required to avoid liability when they reveal, or as a legal matter, they're not required to relay. That's sort of beside the point. As Aubrey said, she thinks they ought to relay. We're not going to burden Study 20 with the legal question of whether they must relay or not. We just simply want to know, are they relaying?
Yeah.
Okay.
So is anybody opposed to deleting B? Okay. Now, by the way, so you know where my head is on this, I think, especially since 20 was, I think, authored by Steve Metallis, that I don't think we're going to be able to make a final decision on this without going back to our list, and in particular to Steve, and make sure he's comfortable, and if he wants to talk about it, he can talk to some of us on that or discuss it on the list. I am deleting B, and I changed it to Study 20 Hypothesis. Anything else on Group E? Okay. Then we go up to the next item, which I think is really quick, and my apologies that my 15-minute estimate was not even close. But I think that this item, item 6, is pretty easy. Basically, I don't think that we've sent, now correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think we've sent the final terms in a clean copy to the council list, have we?
Well, it depends what you mean by final.
Well, this is something that'll evolve, so I'm less concerned about that than I am. Did we send a clean version? I think we sent an edited, you know, a red line version.
I thought I sent both, Chuck. I thought I sent both a red line and a clean to both the... I may not have, but my recollection is I sent, and my intention was to send both the clean and the red line to both the working group list and the council list. And I think I posted the clean version also on the wiki. What I haven't done, there were additional suggestions that Tim made from the registrars, and they were not inline edits. They were ideas, and they were substantial changes. So I thought it best for me not to try to boil his ideas into language and to get the view of the group before trying to do so, to see whether he actually wanted to provide inline changes or other, you know, just how to go about that. If you look at his email of 128, January 28th, that's when, so I captured all the suggestions that were made on the last call, which was the 21st, but then he sent additional suggestions on the 28th, and those have not been incorporated. And he did not send them to the council, just to the, well, I think the whole council is on that Who Is list, plus Steve and Steve and Lee.
I believe so. I believe everybody in the council, plus some people, are on that one. So,
yeah.
In a sense, yes, it did go to the council, but it may not have specifically gone to the council list. But.
Right. But they're rather significant changes. Like he suggests, and he says it sort of conditionally. Like he says it may be worth separating illegal from undesirable. It may be a good idea to incorporate language from the new GTLD material in the term illegal. It may be worth considering combining misuse and undesirable. That's a pretty, those are pretty substantial changes from what we've done, and might require some group edits too. And then he makes some suggestions under commercial purposes as well.
So is some clarity needed from Tim on this?
It depends on how much editorial license he and the group want to give me in trying to, you know, I'm happy to try to boil into language what he's suggesting, but, you know, that others may not agree with these.
Let me suggest this. Would you follow up with Tim, and you can do it on the list or however you like, and just ask him the question you just raised with regard to whether he wants to give you editorial license, freedom to be able to, you know, incorporate the changes as red lines for total group consideration, or if he wants to do that. And then depending on what the answer is, we can go either way, and then probably I think it would be good for us as a drafting team to first of all come to some sort of a rough consensus on which way to go, and then recommend that to the full council. Does that make sense?
Well, my only hesitation would be they're fairly substantial, and if people aren't inclined to think this makes sense, then I'm going to be doing, let me check with Tim first. If he wants to offer red lines, that solves the problem. But I think separating...
Well, then maybe what we should do is ask him to offer red lines that can be considered.
But, you know, would you separate illegal from undesirable, combining misuse? I think you guys see that there could be complications with some of those, too.
Yeah.
And judgment calls to be made.
Is anybody opposed to my suggestion asking Tim if he would propose some red lines for the changes that were mentioned here, if he indeed wants to propose those, and then we'll consider them first on the list. If that doesn't work, we'll probably have to have another call. Is that all right? Anybody opposed to that? Okay. All right. Now, I think that is all we had, and any next meeting will be on an as-needed basis. Now, as far as the motion is concerned, we've got a little bit of leeway there, although it'd be good to get the motion to the full, the revised motion. Is the end of this week? End of this week should be okay to finalize the changes we made on the motion, especially if we can get a response from Steve Metallis. Anybody disagree with that? And then hopefully, if not the first of next week, the end of this week, getting out a red line with the changes. In other words, the motion won't change very much, just in that one area.
Yeah, I can send that out quickly.
Okay.
For Steve Metallis's review and the group's review.
Okay, good. If you'll do that, and I'll mention it in the meeting notes, too, so that people will know. Is there anything else we need to talk about today?
I just want to quickly let people know that I'm still talking to the ALAC about their input on studies, and I'm actually having a third conference call with them tomorrow. They've done some preliminary rating of studies, and I think by the end of the week they will have, I hope, they'll have final rating, and I will know for sure late tomorrow, very late tomorrow, when I will get their input. So I will pass that to the group as soon as I do. But they are still very much actively trying to pull their input together in the next couple of days.
Okay. And when that happens, can you incorporate their results into the Excel spreadsheet? And let's just quickly, if we can just get a quick view whether it significantly changed anything.
Oh, yeah.
If it didn't, of course, it's easy.
Right. As soon as you've got it, Liz, you know, you can give it to me, and I'll change the formulas to include them again.
Oh, thank you, Aubrey.
Okay. And then, let's deal with that when it happens, because the lack of time here is going to be really awkward and slow things down further, but we'll deal with it when we see the results. Maybe it won't be significant.
Yeah, I want to say that I'd still like to shoot for us being able to vote for us on the Wednesday meeting in Mexico.
Well, I think that should be doable, even if their changes are significant. Let's deal with that when we see the results, and I hope you're right that they have that in a couple days. Anything else? Well, thanks, everybody. I'm sorry that my optimism for a short meeting was way off, but I do appreciate your cooperation. And watch on the list the next couple days so that especially if Steve Metalis, or for that matter anybody else that's not on this call, has any comments or concerns about the changes we made so that we can talk about it on the list and try and get this wrapped up this week. Okay?
Thanks, Chuck.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, it's fine.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.